Welcome to Animateez, a retro anime review comedy podcast. Join our resident anime nerd Mackenzie and anime noob Lindsay as they delve into their VHS vault and review the best and worst of what the 80s and 90s had to offer. These episodes contain spoilers and adult language, so stick around if you're cool like that.
Hello and welcome, my little Valentines, to a very special romantic episode of Animateez. I'm your adorable cutesy host, Lindsay, here with my dapper and handsome co-host, Mackenzie.
Hello, yes.
Ooh, yes, hello. It's our Valentine's Day episode, so thanks for being with us. This week is my choice. I thought I would go for a man who we both love as a storyteller and his incredible studio because, you know, we haven't done him yet on the podcast. And I thought, what better time than for Valentine's Day? We are going to be doing a Studio Ghibli film and we're getting some Hayao Miyazaki on this podcast.
I'm racking my brain thinking of what of his stuff is Valentine's Day like, but I can't think of anything.
Oh, but it's one of those things, isn't it, where you're like on the spot and they're like, what's your favorite movie? And you're like, well, it's a movie.
I just can't think of anything of his that's like Valentine's Day.
It's like a romance drama one that I picked. It's based on a manga called Mimi o Tsumasiba and was originally created by Ao Hiragi. Again, I'm so sorry for my pronunciation. All respect to the artists. This week we are going to watch 1995's Whisper of the Heart. This was the highest grossing Japanese film on the domestic market in 1994. And it made 1.85 billion yen in distribution income and grossed 3.15 billion in total box office revenue. So that's pretty impressive. Have you seen this one before, Mackenzie?
You know what's really funny? It's the only I don't think I've ever seen.
Really?
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
When you questioned me like weeks ago and you're like, could we ever do Ghibli on this? And I was like, I've pretty much seen every Ghibli movie, so good luck picking one I haven't seen. No, I haven't seen Whisper of the Heart.
Woo, I pulled it off, everybody. Oh man, that makes me happy.
As I've watched, I've been like, okay, you know, obviously Howl's has a love story.
I know, I wanted to do Howl, but it's 2004.
Princess Mononoke has a love story. Spirited Away has a bit of a love story in there. But I was like, I don't really see them as Valentine's Day. So I guess I can't be a judge of if this one is a Valentine's Day sort of story. And I guess I shouldn't say the other ones aren't Valentine's Day either, because love stories are love stories. So my bad. But I've never seen this one. So for all I know, it is chock full of even more love than the other ones.
I would say it's not exactly like your stereotypical love movie. There is romance in it, and it is kind of like a motivation behind the main character's actions and stuff like that. But it's not your stereotypical like chick flick, whatever kind of story. So yeah, it's basically it follows this 14-year-old girl named Suzuku Tsukishima, and she's a junior high student. Whoa, whoa. And she do you like that pronunciation?
I love when I'm editing this. And there's like 8 different tries for pronunciation on stuff.
Wakaba.
Really glad I left that entire interaction in.
Oh my gosh. I'm so sorry,
just
Japanese
people. Breaking down.
I'm like, all right, sound it out.
All right, sorry. Who's this girl?
Her name is Shizuku. She's 14. She's a junior high student. And she keeps signing out like all these books because she's a writer and she loves reading. And she kind of discovers that all these books that she's checked out has been previously checked out all by the same name.
Oh, it's like a little meet cute.
Yeah. And so she like tracks down this person. She finds this boy who like annoys her and teases her about Concrete Roads, which is like based on the song Take Me Home, Country Roads, you know.
Okay.
But they like develop this kind of like cute little relationship and stuff like that. And there's like a cat in it, which you'll love. I think it's a really cute movie and I'm really excited for you to watch it.
I'm still crazily surprised that you had one I haven't seen. There was a few I hadn't seen up until a month ago when a friend of mine was like, finish this shit. So I finished a few that I hadn't seen of Ghibli stuff. And then this is literally the last one.
Amazing. Oh my gosh. What is your favorite Ghibli film?
Oh, that's a rough question. I know you just earlier literally were like, when you're asked your favorite show and you're like, I mean, it's going to sound like a cop out, but it's always the top three, which is like Mononoke, Howl, and Spirited.
Oh, okay.
Probably Howl's.
Yeah, I would say Howl's my favorite as well. But I also haven't seen all of his films. So the jury's still out.
Well, we'll maybe change that one day.
Perfect.
Being that it is Valentine's Day, that there will be a whisper into my heart after having watched this.
Ooh, I hope so too. Well, go fly away. Weird thing. Learn how to make a violin. Come back once you know how to.
Okay, I'll be back in 10 seconds.
Well, welcome back, my little Valentines. How'd you find that, Mackenzie?
You know, it's so fitting that you chose a Ghibli film this week, because every Friday this month I'm seeing a different Ghibli film in theaters.
Oh, so yeah.
It's very fitting for my current watch schedule.
I just saw all the Miyazaki.
Yeah, I just saw Spirited Away.
That must have been so good.
It was great. It was also in Japanese, which is the first time I've actually seen it in Japanese. So that was fun. And then I'm seeing next, I think I'm seeing Howl's and then Princess Mononoke.
Oh my gosh. I love Howl's. Like, Howl's is one of those movies that if you can see it on a big screen, watch it on a big screen, because there's so many beautiful details that you don't get like when you just watch it on your TV at home.
It's amazing on the big screen. It was fantastic seeing Spirited Away. Spirited Away is so gorgeous too.
Oh,
so that
beautiful.
That was pretty cool. And like, I love Ghibli. Mm-hmm. There is a certain magic behind Ghibli films, especially Miyazaki ones, that you just don't get with other studios. And like, aside from the amazing writing, sound design, voice acting, you also get this like strangely precise and well thought out animation. Like, nothing's missed. Normal things that like little movements of the hand or like efforts to like get out of bed or something are never simplified. It's the full struggle that some of us have when we're getting out of bed.
Absolutely. I was thinking about that too when watching this film. Like, just every single book in the background is drawn. Like,
yep.
Each individual book. There's no like faking it or whatever. Like, just the attention to detail in these films are mind-blowing.
It's hard to explain, but there is a magic behind it all, and I
truly
really like that. However, in this movie, there's no actual real magic. I honestly thought when I saw the picture of that cat that there was going to be like a Cat Returns type scenario, but instead the cat's only alive in the story that she writes.
It's true.
And
I would say I haven't seen Cat Returns, but it is the sequel to this movie, or like a spinoff of this movie.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, I guess he does look like the fucking Baron, so maybe you're right. they're pretty identical.
Now I'm going to need to go watch that movie.
I love it. It's in my top five, I think.
Oh, really? Okay.
But I think it's better this way, because this movie is more about like a raw retelling of what it's like to be in love for the first time,
mm-hmm.
which in and of itself is magical.
Truly.
But as a pessimistic single person myself... I thought I was going to be really dismissive of the story, but it felt supernatural and honest, which I just kind of ended up finding myself smiling throughout it. Suma, Seiba, and Miyazaki really put together an amazing little love story across their two different mediums, the book and the animation. But it's not just a love story.
No.
It's a story of personal growth and coming of age, a story of learning to accept one's flaws and find a way to polish them into something beautiful.
And that it's not going to just happen. It takes a lot of hard work, and there's a lot of stages that you need to go through.
Yeah, and I really like the metaphor they use with that, which I kind of get into later, but like the polishing of the geode.
Yeah.
I really love the characters in this. Like, I'll get kind of more to her family later, but I really like her parents and her sister. Her father's a librarian. Her mother's finishing her master's degree. Her best friend Yuko's outspoken and quite grumpy at times, but I still liked her. A little bit whiny. The shopkeeper slash grandfather is the kind of old man that everyone needs in their life.
Oh, absolutely.
And like, it shouldn't be your own grandfather, but you need to go to a cafe and befriend a wise old man, which I need to start doing.
Yeah, come on, Mackenzie.
Then, of course, you got Seiji and Suzaku, our two main lovebirds, who are quite similar, but are also unique in ways that makes their love possible.
Mm-hmm. I'd say that they're like unique in their own separate ways, but when they come together, like, they blend really nicely and become like, yep, their two individual personalities blend nicely to become one.
Exactly. And then, of course, the most important character.
Are you going to say the cat?
Moon the cat.
How did I know that?
Who, as with all Ghibli cats, has just as much personality as the human cast without ever saying a word.
Oh, I completely agree. I loved it. Moon was so good.
And he's like, yeah, I think they name him Moon because he's as round as the moon. He's a tubby little kitty.
Oh, I love tubby little kitties.
But yeah, no, I love Moon. Give me someone with a cat and I'm here for it.
This one had two cats. Technically three.
Technically three. One of them in a girl's mind. But
yeah.
Let's break down what I watched this week.
I would love
starting
that.
With the intro, where I was definitely not expecting Country Roads as the intro song.
By Olivia Newton-John.
And like, it works.
Oddly. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
It's like set to this backdrop of the city. People, trains, residential streets. And like,
yeah, some really beautiful establishing shots of the city.
Yeah, and Ghibli, and a lot of older anime in general, has this way of making cities just look amazing. Like, they almost, it feels nostalgic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just see like a simple overpass, and for some reason, when it's like an older animated, especially Ghibli film, I'm just like, oh, the overpass.
Remember the good old days with the overpass? Yep, it's just an overpass.
I don't know why, but it
Ghibli
is.
Just but has a way of adding that magic.
It just feels super good. And so we kind of get that little bit of an intro, and then we come into, I broke this down into acts.
Okay.
So act one, Shizuku comes home from getting milk and is chastised for getting a paper or a plastic bag by her super depressed sounding mom, who's not actually depressed.
Yeah.
She just sounds it.
I was like, still relevant today.
Yeah. And then her and her father bond over the fact that they both don't want the library to go digital because they prefer the card catalog.
I know, which is wild. Oh my gosh.
And at first I was like, man, their house is so cluttered.
But like in that beautiful Miyazaki way of like just cluttered maximalism, but it's so romanticized.
It is almost all books, so I have zero complaints. And then we jump right into it. We are discovering that someone named Seiji has been checking out the same books as she has before she has. She's checking out the same books that he's been checking out. And she's like really confused who this boy is. And she really wants to meet him. And so we start her day with her heading to school on summer break, no less. It's not school time yet. Summer break.
Oh, man. She's like, I'm going to read 20 books over the summer. And I was like, nope.
That's a lot of books.
I don't even think I've read 20 books in a year.
My goal this year, I think I said, was 15 books.
Wow, that's ambitious.
I'm hoping for more, but my goal is 15. But I mean, the three books I'm reading right now, the next three books I'm reading all have like almost 1,000 pages. So we'll see how well this
goes. Is it like Dune?
1,000 pages, small text. No, it's other stuff. But anyways, so she's not going to school for school. She's going there because the city library doesn't have the books she wants.
Mm-hmm.
So she bothers one of the people that are there to let her into the library. Probably the nurse, yeah. And then she goes to check out this book and she's like, oh, for the first dang time, Seiji's name's not in here.
Boom, baby.
Boom, baby. And then it turns out it was donated by someone with his same last name.
Yeah, you're like, damn it.
And she's like,
I thought I had the jump on him.
Interesting. Well, okay. And then she goes to meet up with her best friend, Yuko, who's like super mad that she made her wit out in the sun because she's getting freckles, because apparently that's a bad thing.
Oh, nobody wants freckles. And how atrocious.
She shares her lyric she wrote for the school ceremony, which is Country Roads Again.
Yep. In case you didn't have enough of it.
It's not her claiming it's hers. It's a slightly different version. But then she goes, I don't really like this one. And she gives another version, which is like a country roads about like Tokyo.
Yeah, it's like concrete roads. I don't know. Yeah, about the like the city crushing over all the wildlife that was there and the country roads and, like, to make big cityscapes.
If you gave me a bingo card, I would have never thought that on that bingo card was going to be hearing different renditions of Country Roads like 4 or 5 or 6 times across this movie. It is sung at least 6 or 7 times.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to have it stuck in my head now for the next week.
Oh, man. So turns out that Yuko got a love letter.
Ooh.
But she doesn't want to act on it because it's another boy that she doesn't like. And she really likes this other boy who instantly starts talking to her, of course, in this exact moment, which causes her to get flustered and she speeds off. And so they head home and turns out that Shizuku forgot her book. And she runs back to get it and she finds a boy reading it who makes fun of her for her lyrics, which really pisses her off. And she runs around the house yelling stupid jerk. Over and over and over again.
Oh, man. To be a teenager again.
Yeah. I once had someone who, instead of like me finding their notes, would send me multiple notes a day. Like those fancy folded paper things you used to be able to do.
Yep. The like triangle. And they were always fold over and over again. And yeah.
And were some notes for a junior high kid to be getting. Very, very lovey dovey. And I was like, we're not dating.
Now people just DM, I guess. I don't know.
Oh, the day of the paper note.
I know, right? Oh, the internet ruins everything.
So it's now the next day, and Shizuku is going to go mail a letter, which is also apparently a love letter that her sister is sending to someone. She gets on a train, and there's a cat on the train.
This feels very you, this next part.
I love that she talks to the cat like it's a human while it's on the train. Where are you going? What are you up to? Oh, you don't want to talk? You in a grumpy mood? It is very me.
Yeah.
I don't care what the weather is, how cold it is, how hot it is. If there is a cat, I am stopping. I am talking to that cat. And because I have a weird thing where all cats love me and want to cuddle with me, even the raggediest street cat is like, hello, I love you. So she ends up deciding she wants to go on an adventure, gets off the train when the cat gets off the train.
Mm-hmm. I'm just like, oh, I guess we're going the same way.
Goes on this journey of following this cat and then loses it for a little bit, but then finds it again. And then like chases it up this sketchy alley into the most posh version of a Japanese neighborhood you can imagine in the 90s.
Absolutely.
It's like really nice homes overlooking all the rest of the city.
Part of me was like, are we watching Parasite now? Oh, no.
And it turns out that the cat came all this way just to tease a dog.
Yep.
And then to go into an antique shop for a little bit.
Just a stereotypical cat for you.
And it turns out that this shop is stunning.
It's gosh. So gorgeous. It's like this amazing, weird German architecture. And
yeah. And like this weird little like trinkets and like large carousel horses adorned with like jewels. And then this little statue of a kitty wearing a suit who has been aptly named Baron Humbert von Ginken.
Ginken?
It's something like that. I'm just going to call him Baron for the rest of the time.
Yeah, just call him the Baron.
And she meets the store's owner, who's this like old man who has this fantastical clock.
Oh my gosh.
That he just finished fixing, and he turns it on for her so she can watch. And it's got these like gnomes mining jewels in the base, and then at the top,
which is
there's this
so beautiful.
It's animated phenomenally for being like a little scene inside of a clock.
I know, right? Like, I don't know how, but Miyazaki always seems to animate like geodes and crystals and gemstones so beautifully.
They don't just leave them to be little like glimmers in the dark. They are full on going.
They're and gorgeous.
So there's a love story that happens at the top where like this king comes into view as like this sheep at the top falls back and comes back as this woman. Because apparently the love story is that there's this king of the gnomes or the dwarves. And he can't see the woman that he's obsessed with and loves, except for when the clock strikes midnight, when she turns into her fairy self up in the sky, because all other times she's been cursed to look like a sheep.
Oh, it's so good.
And I'm like, aw.
And I she's want this the clock.
She hasn't. She's one of the first and only people to see this happen in a long time, and she's so thankful for it. And she like thanks him so much, and she heads off again. And being the ever forgetful one that she is, goes home, and a boy arrives and is like, "Hey, you. I know your name. You left your bag at the antique store."
That's and she's a lot of food.
Confused as to how he knows it's hers. No, that's later on.
No, it's not. Because she's like, oh, is that Isn't clock? No, because she goes,
oh,
is the clock?
Right. No, you're right. Sorry. She runs away. It's not nighttime yet. She runs away. She has to deliver the food to her father.
Yeah. She realizes it's noon.
Right. Right. And he's like, you eat a lot of food as he like drives off. But before that, she's like, how do you know it's me? And as he turns and goes away on his bike, the cat's sitting on the back of the bike. He's like, how do you think? And I was like,
cat.
But like, as he rides off to make fun of her, he starts singing Country Roads.
Yep. Just to.
Which is adorable.
I know. I was like, this is such a teenage love story.
Yeah. And so she drops off her father's lunch and then goes to check out. And also her dad's like, hey, do you want to stay for and eat with me? And she's like, no, I have books to check out.
I know, right? I was like, whoa. She really loves books, guys.
And so she goes and checks out more books previously checked out by Seiji.
I just love that she's like, in the library. And everybody's like, can you shut up?
Summer is now over. Mm-hmm. And Shizuku has to go back to school. She's taking tests. She's trying to set her friend up with her crush. And she's trying to find out more about the man who donated the book. And learns that his son goes to school with her. Mm-hmm. And then she freaks out because she starts worrying it's the boy that she met prior. And she really doesn't want it to be him. And her friends are picking on her, being like, ooh, you're in love with him. Mm, that's why you don't want it to be him. Mm. And she is not happy about this.
No. Because again, if there's one thing teenage girls love, it's getting teased about something they don't want.
So after school, she decides to go back to the shop. Unfortunately, it's closed. She goes back home to study. And this scene is amazing. You might not think it is. Just her sitting studying. This scene is amazing because it's actually the inspiration for something known as the Lo-Fi Girl.
Oh my gosh, I love the Lo-Fi Girl.
Originally, he used the gif of her studying from Whisper of the Heart for his videos until he started getting popular. And then they were like, oh, I say he, I'm not actually sure. I'm going to say they.
I think it was a he.
They go, oh, I'm getting popular. I should make my own animation. So they did. Yeah. But the second I saw that, I was like, hold the fucking phone. And I went and I Googled. And I confirmed and I was like, oh, that's a fun little neat little tidbit of information to learn, because I also love the Lo-Fi Girl.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways,
in case anybody was wondering where the Lo-Fi Girl came from, Whispers of the Heart. Of the Heart.
There you go. So she gets a call from Yuko, who's so upset because it turns out that her crush is actually best friends or whatever with the guy that sent her the love letter. And he's like, hey, you should like date him.
Oh.
And he's very confused why she gets upset and mad and runs off, because he's very thick. But of course, he's a teenage boy. What do you expect?
Well, exactly. Man, but it's wild that she's so upset that she stays home from school.
Literally, she has a test the next day, which is a big deal in Japan. And she's like, nope, I'm staying home.
Oh my gosh.
I'm so brokenhearted by this.
I'm just like, girl, get a grip. He's a boy. He's a guy.
Shizuku ends up laying into him and being like, you are so dumb. She likes you. Oh my God. Duh. And then he goes, oh, that's not good, because I'm actually in love with you, Shizuku.
And then she's like, ugh!
And I'm like, damn, didn't see that coming.
Nope. That's straight out of left field.
And he's like, what? We've known each other for years. You don't like me? She goes, yeah, I like you, but I don't like you. So I still want to be your friend. So I'm going to pretend this conversation never happened. And we're going to keep going on doing our thing, which is very mature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is very mature.
I knew people who'd be like, I like you. And then that person would never talk to them again. Mm. And I mean, it's not, I mean, look at us. We're exes.
It is true. And we started a podcast together.
And before that, we hung out all the time. Like,
it's true.
You can't let some shit get in the way of a good friendship.
Well, exactly. I mean, but again, how old are we?
That's true.
Like, that's we were true. 13, it would be a different story, I think.
That's a possibility. That's a possibility. So anyway, she turns him down and she's upset by the whole situation. She decides to go to the shop again. Here, she meets the cat again and she confides in it and sits and she talks to it. And she says, you're not very nice, but neither am I. And then she begins to just like go on and on about how all she does is read, and she's kind of like doesn't enjoy his life anymore, and she doesn't know what to do with herself, and she just feels lost. And the cat decides to let her like give him some scritches, and I was like, man, I feel you, girl. I feel you.
That feeling will never go away.
As this is happening, Seiji shows up, and we learn that this cat, this one we learn, it's called Moon, and that he belongs to no one, apparently. This is our first interaction where they're actually nice to each other, and there's actually a little flirting going on.
I know.
Now, she still doesn't know that he's Book Boy.
No.
But they're being nice to each other, and he even invites her into the clothes shop so that he can show her the cat statue, because she thought it was gone, but it's not. It is still there. During this scene, he stands at the bottom of the stairs, and she stands at the top, and she's looking out over the city, and she says, this must be what it feels like to be in the sky. And this mimics that scene from the clock, where the king of the dwarves is at the bottom, looking up at this girl in the sky. Yeah, I didn't see that, did you?
No, I didn't clock that at all when I was watching it.
I had love on the mind watching this, and I was picking up all those little things.
I didn't.
And they go through the basement door to get in, and it's like a bunch of like half-built violins and instruments kind of around, and they go up into the shop, and he shows her the statue of the Baron, and he has her look into its eyes as the sunlight comes into the room, and they glimmer like nebulas. He says it's actually an issue with production that causes this to happen. It's not supposed to be there. He just leaves her alone to enjoy the view and just says, yeah, come find me when you're done. He's not questioning it. He's just like, yeah, you want to see the statue? Here it is. You do your thing.
Yep.
She ends up talking to the statue for quite a while, asking like about the...
a concerning amount of time.
Yeah. Asking about the missing pair that the grandfather wants to find for it, because apparently it has like a long lost partner.
A baroness.
And I kind of just love that she talks to random objects too.
I know.
Like, there's something about, and I'm sure people do it too, like I do it. I just stare at something and I'm just like, I'm gonna. That's not a crazy thing to do. I talk to my rabbit. Well, that's a bit different.
Yeah.
She ends up, yeah, sitting there for a while, and then she goes in the basement and she finds Seiji carving a violin. And she goes on about how much she loves that he's magical and makes instruments out of a block of wood and makes him play for her.
Okay.
And what does he play?
Yeah, he's like, I think you'll know this one.
He plays Country Fucking Roads.
But I actually, of all the versions of the film, I think this one's my favorite, because it does have that like community aspect that does happen with it.
A custom one, because he goes, I will only play if you sing along.
Mm-hmm.
And so we get this like amazingly adorable moment of them playing. But as this is happening, the grandfather comes home with some of his friends, and they hear this, and they kind of come into the basement, and they grab some instruments, and they start playing along. This is another bit of Ghibli magic, because animating people playing instruments accurately is hard.
Oh, yeah.
But this scene does it. Even the slightest like tremolo on the strings of the violin, he kind of arcs into it, and he shivers his hand ever so slightly. Like, the people are moving with the music. You can feel them feeling it. And it was phenomenal. And of course, we also get them actually singing to the music, which
two episodes in a row. What did we do?
And it's so good. And then moments later, after they've stopped playing, they're all having a good time laughing, she learns that this boy's name is actually Seiji, and she gets so mad at this. Why didn't you tell me my name? You never asked it. Well, you know my name. You told it to me. Like, and she gets so mad about this. And the grandpa's just sitting there smiling, because he's like, oh, young love.
Children.
And she's like complaining that she never gets her fairy tale ending. And she was hoping that Seiji would end up being like a really nice boy, not like him. And honestly, he hasn't even been that much of a dick, though.
I mean, he's like teased her. But I mean, like, I feel like all, like the previous like 5 minutes of them, like, him letting her into the store to see the Baron.
And bonding.
Like, yeah. Like,
you think that would kind of like that.
Yeah, soften her like feelings about him?
Or like, you know, he made fun of Country Roads and then he learned it for her. Like, you gotta think that kind of counterbalances things a little bit here.
Mm-hmm.
But moments later, they are made up and he's walking her home. We get this nice evening shot with the city in the background as he talks about his dreams of becoming a world-class violin maker in Italy. And he tells her, you know what? I actually did like the lyrics you wrote, and you should continue writing. And it's like, oh, it's that young love that you so can't sweet. Achieve as an adult.
No, we're too bitter now. It's over for us.
Yep. And after this, Shizuki goes to sleep and we end her perfect day.
Hmm.
And that takes us to Act 3. School has now started. Shizuku's running in the rain to get to school, and she gets there and she has to fight off rumors that she's dating someone because people saw her and Seiji at nighttime walking home. And of course, these rumors get stronger because Seiji shows up at her classroom being like, "Hi, is Shizuku here?" And her classmates lose it.
They like open the windows. They're all watching.
They're chanting. Like, Shizuku has a boyfriend. Shizuku has a boyfriend. Could you imagine doing that as an adult?
Oh my gosh.
Like you're at a party, and I don't mean like jokingly your friends being funny, but like you're like, "Oh yeah, I was hanging out with this boy the other day," and all of your friends look at you fully serious and go, "Ooh, a boyfriend." And they're like married with children, and they're just for some reason,
yeah, right?
Just
shut up, Greg, or whatever.
Yeah. And he's like, "I want to tell you some news. Let's go over here." So they end up going to like a rooftop. Unfortunately, kind of, Seiji's news is that his parents are allowing him to go to Italy for 2 months, because originally he had told her that they weren't going to let him, but he's allowed to do it to prove himself as an apprentice. And if he is good, he can stay. And if he's not, he has to come home
and go to high school.
And Shizuku's like really supportive about this, but then accidentally lets it slip that her dream was actually that she'd get to go to high school with him, because for somehow in the last like 24 hours, she's gone from like, "Fuck this boy," to like, "Oh my God, I love him."
And those feelings have definitely softened.
Well, more than that, because Seiji drops the bomb that he's actually been into her for a while, and even began checking out books he thought she'd like in hopes that it would get her attention.
Which, like, holy moly, that is a long game to play.
That is people, if you're, I mean, our listenership under 18 is actually only 0.3%, which is crazy, but because it's anime, but.
I was like, we literally say in the opening, there's adult language. Don't be so shocked.
What, you didn't do adult language when you were a teenager? What I'm getting at is that if you're young, don't just beat around the bush. Just fucking tell them.
Just go directly. I know it seems really big and intimidating. Yeah. Just go directly.
So he's like, which is really unfortunate, because like he might be leaving for Italy forever now. Mm-hmm. And he finally has her attention. And it's a really cute scene. And unfortunately, it gets cut short by her classmates being immature dummies and like accidentally bursting through the door after listening to this whole thing.
Oh my gosh, it was so funny. They just all like dogpile out of the door.
And like, it's incredible how much emotion is placed upon this one little simple rooftop conversation, but it's so strong. You feel sad for both of them because first loves are hard to forget, and they haven't obviously said anything about loving each other, but you could tell.
Oh yeah, there's
emotions
definitely like
strong when you're
a romantic
young.
Connection. Yeah.
Later that night, she meets up with her best friend Yuko, and she's explaining her whole situation. And there's something about Shizuku that does annoy me. She calls Seiji amazing, and then she says she's just a girl who reads books and isn't worthy of his time.
Oh my gosh. Well, I'm, yeah.
And
okay.
I was like, girl,
okay.
But
like as what? A person who has been pursuing art and creative feats for so long, I like, it was so hard for me to learn to just like take a damn compliment, and now that I see other people not doing it, I'm like, you're not as bad as you think you are. Take the damn compliment. Sometimes people are being genuine.
But seconds later, this actually prompts her to decide to want to be good at something.
I mean, yeah. And then it's like, I'm going to become the best writer. Well, he's trying to become the best violin maker.
Exactly. So she runs home. And as she's doing this, she actually learns that Moon does have a home. One of his owners, little girl, is like, "Mom, he's running away again." Because Moon don't give a fuck.
No, Moon has shit to do.
Yeah. This is where she begins to write her book. She titles it Whisper of the Heart.
Roll credits.
Yeah, exactly. Roll credits. And she decides to write it about the Baron and even asks the shopkeeper for permission.
I thought that was so cute.
He gladly accepts. However, on one condition is that he gets to read it. She's like, "Oh, but it's going to suck. I don't want you to read it." And so he like goes and pulls out a geode from a cabinet as a metaphor and explains and uses it like being an artist and growing and needing to like hone your craft. And it comforts her just being like, "Hey, look at this rough stone. It mm-hmm. looks pretty, but the actual important parts are the little pieces inside that are actually emeralds." and you need to slowly extract those and craft them and shape them and shine them. It's a nice little metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
She begins to think about her novel, and this is where we get our first glimpse of the Baron being a real life character in this, and I this is an understatement, incredible scene.
Oh, 100%.
Stunning visuals of a fantasy world ripe with color and imagination. Like, we've got floating cities, impossibly cut clouds, just like phenomenal.
Stunning.
Like, they're on the grass and every blade of grass is animated as they jump into the sky and ride the air currents through this world.
Yeah. And the name of the artist who did this was Naohisa Inoue. Again, I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that right. He did the whole flying scene and it's incredible. Like, it's a literal work of art.
The backgrounds are just like, oh, I have more in the backgrounds. I don't want to see them again, but they're just, oh, so good.
Oh my gosh. And again, beautiful geodes, beautiful crystals, beautiful gemstones.
And then all of a sudden we cut back to her in a library researching nature, folklore, cats, and more for her story. And her dad like looks over and sees her in like
in nonfiction.
The nonfiction section. He's like, shocked. What the hell's going on? Cool. I've never seen her read something that wasn't a fantasy. She's doing this, and then she's like so into it when she finally looks up hours later. Seiji is sitting in the library across from her.
But just like didn't even notice him.
He's like, hey, I want to hang out. She's okay. And he goes, No, don't stop what you're doing yet. Wait until you're finished. And he just hangs out reading with her as she finishes quietly researching. Mm. This is like the night before he's supposed to leave to go to Italy. I was like, ooh, they're going to kiss. They didn't. He just kind of gives her a little handshake and then bikes off again. But this brings her back to the world of Baron, which is now even more stunning. We've got these visuals of shops and city streets bathed in color. Like, the backgrounds are detailed without detail, if that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely.
They're these like paint splotch backgrounds that are vibrant, but they don't have, you know where you are. You can tell where you are, but they don't need to have detail. It allows the main characters, like the character like Baron, to stand out and not take away from it, but also still be this just, I don't know, incredible, crazy fucking.
This like, every stroke, every color, every whatever is so strategically placed that nothing is needed. Like, there's never more than what needs to be there. There's never less than what needs to be there. It's all just so precisely done and so beautiful that it's just incredible. And you can, it highlights the Baron and the Baroness and like focuses on them, but still makes it this fantastical environment that they exist in.
Exactly. We learn that these two cat statues were being made and they were granted by their creator the ability to love. And then one day, one of them is stolen. We jump back and it turns out we're back at her house and it turns out she's been doing nothing but writing. And is even losing track in class and at home. So much so that her mother has to go meet with her like teachers as her grades have gone to shit. Apparently, she has decided to follow in Seiji's tracks and not go to high school.
Yeah.
And her sister is pissed.
Yeah, her sister is like, are you kidding me? No, go to high school. Finish school. Like, and she kind of is the disciplinary, like, figure tough of love the household. In this. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Because
but I do like
her
how
father,
her I like how like the next part with her parents.
Yeah, her father decides to mediate the situation and is very calm. He sends the sister away. He brings the mom in who just got home, and he just wants to know what's more important than her grades. And all she says is she has to finish her project so that she can feel good enough. And she's still not telling them what the project is, but her father says, "Look, I respect the work you're doing. Even if you won't share what it is, I respect it." And here's the thing: I love her parents.
I know. They're so good.
They tell her that they will let her do whatever it is she's doing, even if it hurts her grades, as long as she accepts the consequences without complaint if things do not work out for her. Mm-hmm. Her mom even goes so far as to say, look, even I, you know, I want to go against the norm sometimes. Sometimes I want to rebel against what I'm supposed to be doing. And here's the thing. It's obviously scary to look at your like grade 9 daughter and be like, hey, all right, you think this is something you want to do? do it. And a lot of parents wouldn't do that. They would say, no, my house, my rules, you study constantly, you do nothing but that. But the problem is kids don't learn that way.
Mm-hmm.
And they definitely don't get life experiences that way. I had a 2-foot-tall mohawk and leopard print pants. My family could have easily shut that down real quick. And of course, they fought back a little bit, but like in the end, they just let me do it. And it really helped my creativity as a teenager, and it really helped me with my art and all this other stuff. And it's scary when your kid in grade 9 wants to come home with a purple mohawk and then grows it real big, but sometimes you just got to let that kind of stuff happen and let them learn for themselves.
And well, and the thing is, like, there's worse things your kid can do.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think, when I remember I had a teacher in junior high, and every time we'd go on a family vacation, I'd go to him and ask for homework to do while I was gone. And he's like, no, you don't need it. You're going to learn more in the real world than you will in my classroom. So like,
exactly. Now, I'm glad they understand this, even if it hurts them and it makes them uncomfortable. The only rule they said that needs to be implemented if she's going to do this is that she has to keep coming to eating dinner with them because they miss her eating dinner with them.
Which and I also like, am like, that's such damn. A good deal. Because it's so true. It's like studies mm-hmm. have shown how important eating dinner as a family is.
It doesn't matter if it's at a table or at a TV.
It just matters that you're together.
Know. Yeah, exactly. Because at my dad's house, we'd always eat at the table, unless it was like pizza night or something. My mom's house, we just eat on the couch and watch stuff. But we were still there. And I think that's the important part.
Mm-hmm.
So after all this, she's writing her book and she cuts to a dream sequence now. Shizuku is in a cave of gemstones and she's looking for the stone from the metaphor the shopkeeper gave her. And she hears his voice, find your stone, find your stone. And she picks the most beautiful stone in the cavern. And then as she holds it in her hand, it transforms into a dead chicken fetus.
Oh, yeah. I was like, oh, no.
And she wakes up unsure of if the path is actually worth it or not, because she's stressing out. She clearly misses Seiji, this poor, poor girl. And we cut to the grandfather napping now in Act 4. Our final act. And he's in front of his fireplace and he's dreaming of this woman from long past. And she's beautiful. And he reaches out and goes, I'm so sorry for getting old on you. Because his memories of her is when they're younger.
Mm-hmm.
But when he sees her, all he thinks is that she's seeing him as an old man. He kind of wakes up as Shizuku walks through the door in the exact same sequence that his past lover did. And she goes, here's my story. It's trash. I need you to read it right now. Like, he goes, but I'd like to read it slowly and really take it in. She goes, no.
Read it immediately.
No. But don't do it in front of me. Yeah. I'm going to go in the basement.
I know. She's like, you sit, you read, I'll leave.
Literally, I'm going to go in the basement for 4 hours while you read this book.
And I'm just going to I'm just going to panic pace while you read it and tell myself how shit I am at writing.
Yeah. And so he reads it and he tells her he likes it. He called it raw, but heartfelt.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, no, you're wrong. You're wrong. But he won't have it. He's like, no, 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 no. What did I tell you? It's rough. He's like,
look at this gemstone, bitch.
Yeah, yeah. Gemstones are good even when they are rough. But when you polish them, they're even better.
Yep.
So all you have to do is polish this and make it perfect. And then she goes off in this thing again, how she'll never be good as Seiji. And again, shopkeep's like, you really like this boy? I ain't hearing this. And is like, screw you. I'm making us dinner. Here's this really good looking ramen. And then to make her feel better is like, hey, just so you know, Seiji's first violin was trash. And he was 4 times more upset than you were. It took 4 bowls of ramen for him to feel better, which is really funny.
Oh, I love it.
And then we get our second love story of the movie where he still tells his story of
buying this cat statue. Love story? This sounds like, I think it's like the third or fourth.
Sorry, you're right. This is like the third or fourth. Ignore me. I'm forgetting about the best friend and all that jazz. But we get another love story.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out he was in Germany and he was at a cafe and he was seeing this woman while he was in Germany. And he kept going to the cafe being like, can I buy this? Can I buy this statue? And he kept being told, nope, I don't want to sell them unless they're pairs, but the other baroness is off being repaired. When it comes back, you can buy them. Now, unfortunately, he had to leave to go back to Japan for a little bit. But he goes, I need the statue. The girl goes, how does this sound, Mr. Cafe owner? I will buy the other statue when it comes back. And then when he comes back to Germany, they'll be paired up again. And he goes, you know what? That's good enough for me. Take your statue. He goes back to Japan. He's only supposed to be there for a little bit. And then the war picks up.
Oh, I thought he had to leave Germany because the war was starting.
He comes back and then the war starts. And unfortunately, he never sees her again. He goes back to Germany.
And back to the cafe.
But he was gone for so long that he can't find her or the Baroness ever again. He explains that her story gave him this renewed memory of her in his younger years and makes her promise that she'll polish her story so that he can read this final product that kind of really hit home for him because it's about a cat that's really important in his life. And I was like, oh my God.
I know, right? You're just like, my heart.
And so it's now been a bit of time. It's been the 2 months. And Seiji has returned from Italy a day early and surprises Shizuku. He waits outside her window, doesn't knock on it, doesn't throw a rock, nope. Does nothing, just waits until she eventually would wake up and see him, and she just happens to. And he tells her she has to come with him right away and get on the back of his bike. Here we learn that he was not good enough to stay in Italy.
Ooh.
So he will also complete high school while polishing his skills and try again after. Which is really funny. And she's actually already said this to her parents as well. After being told that her story was good by the old shopkeep, she's like, I love you guys. Thank you so much. I want to attend high school. I'm going to keep working on my project, but I'm going to do it slower now that I'm able to like refine it and put a bit more time into it. But so he gets her on the back of his bike and they're riding away and they get to this massive hill. And he's like, I've told myself my goal is to ride up this very steep hill with you on the back of my bike for some reason.
I know. I was like, that's such a strange goal.
Really strange.
Like, no.
But Shizuku is like, no, I refuse to be a burden to you. We're going to do this together. And gets off the bike and pushes while he rides. They could have both just gotten off and walked up the hill, but it's a symbolic moment, right?
It's teamwork. There are two horses coming together as one.
Exactly. They get to like this little plateau that overlooks the city, and he tells her this is where he comes for inspiration. And I was like, oh, they're going to watch the sunrise together. And they do. And it's this beautifully animated sunrise that just glows and warms your screen. And he confesses that he's sorry he wasn't there to help encourage her writing. And she's like, nah, bitch. You were my inspiration. Mm-hmm. I didn't need your words of encouragement because you were the story.
You leaving made me inspired.
Then he drops a bomb of a question for junior high kids.
Yeah. And especially because they're like, this is a very kind of fresh relationship.
They've technically only hung out like less than five times.
Yeah.
But he's like, hey. Do you ever see us getting married? I'll be a violin maker and you'll be a writer. She is like, you know what? Yes, I have. And he embraces her and tells her he loves her and the credits roll.
Yeah, and they like share a coat now, in the wind and stuff.
Something I really love about this last scene.
Okay.
Is that it's not set up to be overtly romantic. Even when he says he loves her, he's like, I love you. Like, it is so middle schooler telling someone they love them for the first time. It's so realistic. It's not just like we embrace, the camera pans close to our faces in a zoom and like, I love you. You don't get any of that. It is like, I love you. Like,
yeah,
it's
just
so
like blurted out.
Organic.
Just like,
Yeah, exactly. It reminded me of the first time I ever said that to someone when I was in junior high. Like, just letting it come out. It's not like adults where it's a little bit more of like a slow kind of like.
It's more suave.
Got that L-O-V-E, Riz.
Yeah, I was going to say, got that Riz.
Riz.
Oh, man. Well, it is funny because I was thinking about it and I was like, I feel like we dated longer than these two did before I asked you to be my boyfriend. Like, could you imagine if I've been like, you want to get married?
If I remember specifically, we went on a date and then I didn't hear from you for 2 months.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden you were like, yo, what's up?
I was like, Digimon's playing in theaters. You want to go?
And I was like, fuck yeah, I do. Like, literally, it was like, we went to go see Ghostbusters.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're like, it seemed fine. And then we didn't talk for 2 months. And then all of a sudden, like, yo, Digimon, bitch.
I was like, wanna go okay. see Digimon?
And you're damn right.
Get
I did.
Frozen yogurt after?
But, and meet your mom?
No, that was a different time.
The next time.
No, it was not. Because we...
First
no, it was
four
not.
Times. It was we within were, the first four times.
No, we were yeah. dating. We had, no, no. Because
yeah.
I know for a fact,
mm-hmm.
I would not have.
She's wrong, everybody.
To...
Oh, no, Kenzie. It wasn't purposeful. She happened to be, like, in a park nearby.
I swear we were boyfriend-girlfriend for a while before.
No, we were absolutely not.
I just remember
Regardless.
My mom... saying the cabbage story in
me.
Front of me. Oh, yeah.
And she told me the cabbage story. Exactly.
Oh, my gosh. I was
very
mortified.
Good. You mortified. Were very mortified. And I was very happy.
I was
but
like, Mom, you're never meeting a boyfriend again.
People don't need to keep hearing about this from
no.
me. This whole film, I'll say it again, felt realistic and honest. And it does touch the heart. It whispers into your heart. Mm,
get out.
Romance
get out.
And love.
Leave. Get out.
And I mentioned nostalgia, and I still hold that thought that it's very nostalgic, but it's just so nostalgic for being a child in love. And it's like I mentioned this before, it's really only a feeling you can get once, but it's a feeling that you can look back on and it feels good. And this movie really just like brings you back there.
Mm-hmm. It gives you
and
the
I
warm
know
fuzzies.
I kind of question, I was like, what Miyazaki movie is like a Valentine's movie? Like, I'm referencing, oh, there's love in other Miyazaki movies, but none of them really felt like a Valentine's Day, like, actual kind of, like, story for that. But I was wrong. This one had the vibes of a proper love story. And, of course, again, people are like, what, Howl's Moving Castle's not a love story? It's not what I'm
it
saying.
It is, but it's also, like, it an is. Anti-war film, and it is, like,
exactly.
love is part of it. It's not the whole part.
Exactly. This whole thing is just, like, love, 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 love. And that movie poster where it's her floating through the air of this fantastical world with a cat did not prepare me for what I was about to watch because I was going for fantasy and it was very, very not fantasy.
Nope.
But like I said, that was really good. So I'm finally all caught up on having seen all of the Ghibli stuff now. Sorry, that's
oh,
a lie. I haven't seen the earwig one because that animation style makes me want to vomit.
The earwig one?
Don't even look, Google it. It's basically
okay.
just, yeah. Anyway. Other than that one, I've seen them all now.
Great.
So it's been complete. My journey Whoa. Has finally been complete.
Well, I haven't seen a lot of them. So next
well,
time you get
we
to
might end up watching,
your...
we ended up watching some more. Probably The Cat Returns because it's just, I love The Cat Returns.
Except that one's like 2005. So it's like out of our.
Oh, fuck. You're right. I can't do Cat Returns. I didn't even place that the cat and the cat were basically the same thing. So anyways, we'll figure it out. I'll get you something
yeah.
you haven't seen before.
Yeah, it'll be great. Oh, man. So do you want to hazard a guess for what this might have been ranked or
so
rated?
It's a Ghibli film.
Mm-hmm.
It's
so
a
you
Miyazaki
know
Ghibli
it's,
film.
It's going to be high.
It's already going to at least be a 7.
Mm-hmm.
Taking into account that it's a fairly, what I've learned, beloved film, I'm going to say 8. I'm give it an 8.35.
You are very close, my friend. On MAL, it is 8.22.
Ooh, mm-hmm. nice. I'll
yep.
take that. You know what? That's a good rating. I approve of that rating.
I agree with that rating. Yeah, absolutely.
Hell yeah.
Woo-hoo.
No, this was a comforting watch.
Mm-hmm. It was a
definitely
very
a change from last week.
Holy moly. Yes. This one, yeah, it's not going to emotionally traumatize you. And, like,
no.
the only feelings that you're going to, like, leave with it are, like, warm and fuzzy and not, like...
Exactly.
Your
not
brain
existential
is
crisis.
Yeah. So, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, no. So, I'm... Thanks for the little Valentine's special.
You're welcome. You're welcome, sweetheart. Well, anyways, that is our episode for this week. Please like and subscribe to us because we really appreciate it. Give us a good rating because I love our analytics. And please follow us across social medias. We are at Animaties on all of them. So, you know, Instagram, TikTok, X, I almost, I don't know, Twitter, I don't know.
Don't that call it thing. X, it's Twitter. Twitter's the one that we're most active on. I you don't go on Twitter. I manage the Twitter.
Yeah, I was like, I don't have Twitter.
I post constantly on that Twitter.
You can see some of Mackenzie's drawings.
Oh, yeah. Between my great artwork and some of the shit posting I do, I also do post some legitimate content related to our our genre of anime.
It's true. But yeah, so thank you so much. Please come back next week where we're gonna have another fabulous episode. Mackenzie's gonna introduce me to God knows what. But until then, we miss you all. Have a good Valentine's, a good Palentine's, a good Galentine's, whatever you celebrate. Yeah, just love yourself, love others. Bye.
This is me whispering into your heart.
Stop it.
Love.
No. Taking my headphones. Ooh. Da 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 da.